Well, so it's most we have there about nine those lots. So I think we're. I wait for that.
Don, we just got to put a switch on the map.
And I think they need to tell you want to style everybody has a switch.
Oh yeah, so these are fun. On the back, there's a switch that turns it on, and then you'll notice when it's red, it's not on. You know, hit that little mute button, or that it'll be on. And then you gotta hold it to mute go from then on, so it'll just be on active.
So
it'll pick up anything you got.
Oh, he was sitting in front of us. Yeah. Okay. Well, we welcome you all here. It's a beautiful fall morning. I don't know about your area, but a lot of color between here and Easy City on the mountain. So we had a frosting of snow I guess it was Monday after the snow and the clouds lifted and Kemp was there in her glory.
Yeah.
So, beautiful day. We welcome all of you. We don't get there very often. It's always good to see all of you. Appreciate your efforts in your individual areas and regions and the great work that we do for this CDBG program. We've got a couple of new people we'd like to welcome. Is Corinne? Where's Corinne?
She's here.
Corinne Olson. She's the new program specialist from CERTA. CERTA is the new name for Southeastern Area Agency. So we welcome Corinne.
Thank you.
Brandon Clark. Where's Brandon?
He's joining virtually.
He's
not on yet.
Back there. So, Brandon, he's the environmental review specialist for state CDBG, that one?
For all of HCD.
For all. Okay, so, Brandon, we welcome you. And Catherine Halterman. Catherine, yes.
She on?
Do
you know?
Oh.
Or is the only one on?
Okay. So, she's the single family housing program manager, environmental review manager, so welcome these new people aboard. Any other new people? Anybody that we didn't get on the list? Heather Mills is now from Mountland Association of Governments. She and Jessica are working together. So your official title is? Jessica.
Yes.
Hey, anybody else? All right, thank you. Next item of business, the acceptance of our March 14th meeting minutes. They're in the packet. If you haven't, they were sent out yesterday. An opportunity to review those. Or need a minute, quick minute, poke them over.
I'll make the motion to accept the minutes as prepared.
Second.
Here we have a motion from Mr. Van Wagner, a second from Mark Allen. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Our minutes are approved. Official. Okay. We need to take oath of office. Many have done that, but they weren't sure who and where, and lots of idea was to review that and do that again. And then also the conflict of interest. So, Elliot, you want to jump on that?
Good morning. Just by way of a little explanation on the oath of office, you may use the word affirm if you so choose. So who needs to take the oath?
We're just going to do it
for everybody. Okay. So you all have the form in front of you?
Go to the left side of your folder if you are a committee member. Your form will be.
Yeah, you're on the committee.
I have a spare if anyone's to say.
Yep.
You do need to fill it out and sign it, and I will notarize it. But we'll have everybody just raise your hand, and we'll do this group. Those online.
We'll send Paul his and have him do it with his own authority.
Yeah, Paul, if you can have it signed and notarized. Soon, not at your leisure. So is everybody ready? Okay, so repeat.
Having been elected or appointed to the office of always swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Utah. discharge the duties of my office. So we just need to sign these and then just turn them in and you'll notarize that we were here and you knew you did it. Okay.
And thank you for your service. Also, conflict of interest, same thing in disclosure form. You've probably heard the phrase TMI, too much information. That does not apply in this case. It is better that you tell us what's going on beforehand than afterwards. So if you have a business interest or if you are a close relative, a family member has a business interest that is dealing with CDBG or other aspects of the state, please disclose that. Just explain briefly what it is. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to kick you off the committee. But if and when a conflict arises, we will have to deal with them. But like I said, TMI does not apply to it.
Thank you. I had an experience. For a lot of years, I was on, well, I'm still on, the Community Action and Food Bank in Utah Wessex in Summit County. I was on the board, and my great aunt was also on the board. She was the past mayor of Orem. She served on that board. We didn't even think about it. We filled it out for years, and we don't have no conflict. Now, one day, somebody said, she's your aunt, her great aunt. And I said, well, yeah. I said, well, that's conflict. It really was. I mean, but just like he says, just relative or whatever, just to slow it so that anybody that might be interested can see what that conflict potentially could be. Yes. So thank you for that. Thanks, Elliot. Okay, next item, Jesse, capital improvement list, Paul.
Can just start talking.
Oh, so.
I don't have that.
Usually share those. Yeah. I shared the memo.
Yeah. It was on the
That's this memorandum, correct?
Yes.
That's what we're talking about.
I just sent it.
We all got it.
So here's the problem. When I share the owl, I it's like crash based when I'm trying to also share a screen. So I never share screen on the screen.
Oh.
They have a copy of it, Paul, if you want to talk about it. Do you want to?
Well, I'll just have the Cliff Notes version. All right, so I was asked to come in and discuss the capital asset self-inventory. So first off, I'm Paul Moberly. I work at HCD with all these awesome people here that are supporting your program. So I worked closely with the Community Impact Board. Some of you really know it, and others probably are aware of it. It's a funding tool for Utah. And as part of that, we developed, in an effort to support better projects for the board and also to encourage better planning at the community level, we developed something called the CASI, which is the Capital Asset Self-Inventory. So what CASI is normally when a community is looking at their assets, and mayors all know this stuff probably in depth, right? When you're looking at plans for the next year, what projects you're going to pursue, you first want to take a look and say, okay, what's the condition of my current assets? What's the condition of my roads, of my city hall, of the parks, whatever it is, right? How are my vehicles doing? So you want to know everything that's actually currently happening in your community. And then you say, okay, which one of those, all right, we got, probably about a year left on that, on our truck. We got, a couple rundown things in the park, and our road from this, from first to the third needs to be chip sealed, right? So you get all that, and then you say, okay, so this year, those are the projects we're going to pursue. We're going to put all those down. So what the CASI does, it's just a real simple template we developed to help kind of channel the energies, but it just helps capture all that information of what is in the community. Now, some communities that are larger might already have a system in place. I don't know if Flushing Parish does or not. I'm going to tell you, but
I think we do. Yes.
We probably do. Sure, larger communities definitely do. They have things in place to track all this stuff. This is geared more for, the small to mid-sized communities that weren't doing this activity. Anyway, so the intent of it is also to make it so it's something that they do on their own. It's not something that an engineer needs to come in. They don't need to pay extra for it. It's really just to get information down. What we found is there was lots of communities, and it's sort of anecdotal, but I have some examples, but we'd go in and we talk to a community, and they, you know, we had the public works director, and they've been there, you know, 25, 30 years. They're maybe close to retirement, and they're the only person that knows where everything is and knows when everything was installed. And they know everything, and it's all in their head, but we need to get it down on paper. So that was the encouragement to do that, was this passage. And then, like I said, the community impact board asked us to develop this and move it forward so that it would encourage communities to look first at what they had, look first at the condition of those assets and the things before they came in for their projects, before they went in front of the board and said, oh, well, we need, you know, our city hall revamped. Well, actually, our water lines are, you know, 50 years old and we're getting some leaks, but we weren't really looking at that too close. So the requirement as it currently stands for the CID is that the entity has to have a CASI or similar or equivalent in place before they get on the CID application list. And that's the list that is compiled. I think it's pretty similar to you guys' consolidated plan, sort of, as I understand. But they have to get on that list before they can apply. And so you have that kind of chain of requirements. What we've been in discussions with, our director has directed Jennifer and I to, and Zach got both. Well, actually, Zach helped me develop it in the first place, so he used to work with me. We were here to discuss the CASI possibly being used as a vendor or a requirement or an assist to document for products that are going on to the consolidated plan.
Consolidated plan. So with CDBG, part of the application process is we ask all of the in areas submits for a project, we ask for a capital inventory list or a capital improvement plan. It's the same thing, but it is, the terms are used differently. People use both terms. The problem that we were having is when we get these lists, we can't tell who's reviewed them, if it's a vetted list, if a grantee is just quickly going into an Excel sheet and putting a couple projects on this thing just to submit that with their application. So we don't have a really good list. Some of the lists are fine, but not all of them. And so our issue in CDBG is we have to show HUD that we are funding the most needed project in an area. So if we get a capital improvement list and it has water and sewer lines at the top of their priority and we're funding a part, but we've received an application for a water sewer line, you know, they're going to ask us, okay, well, why did you fund this part above this project? And so we have to come up with some sort of list to submit with applications that's been vetted and looked at, not just made up during the time of application. And so when I got CID, when I moved into this role, I knew that Paul and Candace had this CASI and this list already done, and they were already working with communities on this. I'm like, okay, well, maybe we can use that for CDBG too, because areas are already using it. And instead of having to do things twice, we're just trying to combine that.
So this list will be created at the AOG level for each of their areas, each of the jurisdictions in their area, or the jurisdictions create the list for their specific jurisdiction?
So the way the thing is currently set up, we have just this inventory, and then the AOGs compile our list for CID. And they can put all those projects together. They, well, you know, talk to all the communities and they work with that and pull it together. What we're moving forward, we have a new template. We're trying to actually focus more, based on feedback from the AOGs, we're trying to push more towards still documenting, still looking at your current state, but also developing a capital improvements list, a capital improvements plan, which that's the next thing. So after you've looked at those current assets, you say, okay, these are the things that we're going to prioritize for this year, the next 5 years, next 10 years, those projects. So we're trying to push to moving towards that with that backup documentation of, you know, that due diligence of looking at the current assets. And then so every entity would go through their own thing, make their own list. You know, they determine their own prioritization of things. All that happens at that level. And then we would hopefully combine that all into one big list that would go across at the county, and we can also file at the ARG, at least the county for CIP.
Well, and Paul's working with the AOG reps. He's working with the rural planners. He's going to be going over the new templates so that they're familiar with that.
There's a lot of moving parts because we have a special service district that takes care of all the roads and all the cities. And so they have their own list that goes in. It takes part of that away from individual cities and puts it in a big group of the roads.
Well, I know in county council last night that our public works director mentioned they're reviewing road around the county and kind of getting an inventory of what needs maybe attention sooner than another area. But that one of this list too, as they put that together, our public works department.
Yeah, like I said, it's a different department, but yeah, you can.
Go ahead.
So I get the purpose of the casting, why it's put together, et cetera, that those discussions there. Just for clarification, are we being asked to essentially just have a CASI on file for both CIV and CDBG now as a prerequisite for application? Is that the question, right?
You can pull your mic now.
And then, second to that, so if we are being required to have a CASI on file for CDBG and CIV, is the requirement then to simply have the project listed on the CASI, or are we also essentially creating a list for CDBG of projects like the Uber for CIV? I guess those would be my clarification questions.
You don't have to have a different list for CDBG. You don't have to. We just have to have something. And if you have a, what is it that you guys have in place in six counties that you created that show?
For CDBG?
Yeah.
So for CDBG, we've never created a list of projects, right? We just create a list of priorities, which I think not those terms get mixed up. I've looked at projects as topics and activities as projects or whatever. But,
so what have you been turning in with your applications? Just pulling, where you pull that from, where you pull those projects from?
We don't have a project list for CDBG. Have a topic list. We have like water projects in number one, sewage in number two, those three, recreation four, whatever, right? Okay. And then they think like anything within those, the rating making criteria gets them points based on where that project falls, right?
But where does that 1, 2, 3, 4, where do those come from?
It comes from a survey.
Like the priorities, it comes from a survey that we do when we're putting together an action plan.
Okay. That, you can still do that.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. We just have to have something that has been vetted that shows that a grantee is not, for now. I mean, we're still figuring all of this out, working with the AOGs, right? Okay. So the CASI and a specific list it's not going to be a requirement right now until we finish working things out with the AOGs internally. We just need some sort of list. I'll be honest, like not last year, the year before, I didn't even look at the lists that were submitted with applications because some of them were I don't even need to look at this. We're not even going to look at these this year because, again, there's no proof that this has been vetted. We don't know where this information has been pulled from. We don't know how we're getting it. So we're just trying to figure out the best way to navigate that. So Paul's going to share the new template. If areas don't have a way of like getting information like Sixth County, then yeah.
So this is a work in progress.
Yes.
Go ahead, Jess.
Yes. So I'm trying to make sure I understand correctly. The CASI is an inventory of what you currently have, your current assets. If you're applying for a project for CDBG, that needs to be a priority project on a different list because the asset is it included in the CASI as an asset that needs maintenance or improvement, or is this a new project and then it would be in the CASI?
Sometimes a project, a submitted project, might be a new project that would be on the list.
Yes,
correct. It's an asset.
Totally, yeah.
Right.
So the as we've structured the new template at least, again, the due diligence happens on that inventory side. You know, that's when you're looking at everything, right? But then there's a separate thing with where you actually outline your projects. And so those are, I mean, that's kind of the backup documentation in some ways. But then if there's new projects that you just, oh, this is a brand new, we're building a brand new shed, you know, like maintenance shed or something. You don't have one of those, great. And that's an additional, item on the capital improvements plan side of the. So,
do you have a length of time that projects are on a priority? That how do you like for water and water and sewer? Do you say 5 years is going to be at the top? That this is going to be our priority for this length of time, or?
This is all with the intent to improve planning and improve the projects that come in front of any of the funding boards. If the community looks at their things and says that's our top priority, and maybe it's like, you know, we have different time horizons. So this year is going to be a 1 year. So for CIB, for context, we require a 1 year list, and they put everything on there that they could potentially apply for that year. And they also, CIB also requires a 5 year list that goes on there. And that's, you know, things further in the future. You know, for your own planning purposes, if you're looking at trying to budget and looking ahead at your costs and things, you know, you could have a 10 plus. I mean, that's just a kind of up to the community how they're planning, how they want to arrange things. But, like best practice would be you'd be planning quite a bit ahead in the future. So, you know, hey, in 10 years, we're going to have to repave all these roads. It's going to be, you know, a couple million. We better plan for that. We know that at the same time, we're tearing up the roads. We got to look at our water line and, you know, when's that coming in? Our sewer lines are kind of old. You know, you got to line all those things up ahead of time. We have enough time to plan, to apply for the funding, do all that stuff.
And I think that is wonderful because it avoids applications for CDBG that come in as an emergency. Because emergency applications should never happen because you've got your CAFI and you know, like you said, you know that 5 years this fire truck is going to be broken. So you need to make sure that it's going to come up in the next application that you're going to take care of this deteriorating fire truck or this deteriorating sewer. Instead of coming in and saying, this is an emergency. And not part of your regular application process. So I like this idea to make sure that it does get implemented.
But what if your long term, what's on your long term list? Because an emergency, it needs to still be on that long term list. It moves smoother into that short term.
Yeah. Well, for CIB, we have a mechanism for emergency things that come in. I mean, because sometimes money just breaks, you know? I mean, and you could sort of try to plan that out, but it just happens. Like things do. You know, all of a sudden break down. The intent is to hopefully help move things to be less of those, like, last second, oh, man, I forgot. We, you know, our truck is 30 years old and barely run, you know, our transmission just went out on it, you know, whatever it is. The intent is to try to look at those things so those things don't become emergencies. And then you're actually dealing with real emergencies like disasters, breaks, critical step failures.
Matt, go ahead. Can I raise a concern? So the number of projects that are eligible for CDBG funding are pretty limited, right? So what if you had your priority list 1 through 20 and the only project that's eligible for CDBG funding is priority number 14?
That's fine. That's okay. We can show HUD. Yes, this is the projects are in order based on priority and need, right? But this funding stream doesn't fit with these projects, so we move down.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
So it would be, the other projects would not necessarily deter, or priorities wouldn't deter from an application because they didn't qualify for a certain assistance like CDBG.
And it will, I mean, eventually we want to get to a place, I mean, we're all working on it, right? AOGs, HED, other departments too. We've all been thinking about, okay, how can we come up with a list of, the needs in an area and the best funding streams to use, like to fund those types of projects. Hopefully one day we can get there. We're just, not there yet. Right?
So is there any kind of a deadline that we need AOGs to be have this up to?
So Paul has been meeting with, did you already meet with the AOGs?
No, I have it all scheduled next week.
Next week?
Hopefully.
Yeah, we're going to get it done before the How to Apply workshop.
We'll catch up.
Yeah.
Well, if they haven't done the needs assessment in that plan, that would take a little bit longer.
Yeah, and we understand that. That's why it's not a requirement right now. That's why, because we want to get everybody up to speed on board in a good place.
So I guess that was my question. When does it become a requirement? Next year's cycle, perhaps? Or the year after that?
So
the moving target is next year, but we want to make sure that as we are working with people, it's done correctly. So
when we rolled it out, sorry.
Go ahead.
When we rolled it out for CIB, we had it. We had soft launches basically for a couple of years before it was actually required by the program to be in place. But that time gave everybody time to kind of vet through the templates and work with the communities and get like understanding the idea behind it. And then hopefully by that time, everyone was comfortable with it, had them all in place. And so it wasn't a big burden for that for them.
The fact that a lot of that stuff's in place for CIB, it should be easy to roll over and make it available on the CWG side that way.
Let's hope. Well, I think also, I mean, we were having discussions about it yesterday or the day before. I don't want to get too hung up on the mechanism for the CASI is one of the things that we're pushing out. Well, for CIB is required, but the intent is to have that documentation in place. Like you were saying, you want to have good documentation so that these projects are well vetted. There is things in works to make a different system that could be rolled out in the future. There's still a lot of there's things in motion. So this is kind of we're hoping a process moving towards just generally better planning, good documentation for the programs, better projects.
Yeah, I think a simple question. Are you going to help us understand what properly vetted means in this as we move forward with this?
Yeah.
It's part of the system that is set up. When we say capital asset self-inventory, it's a whole system where we work with communities and AOGs work with communities to understand what they have, how to prioritize, and how to document that
prior. So are we talking about adoption by motion at city council levels and then at the governing board level of the AOG? Are we talking about some sort of outside audit or I'm new to this. I'm just not sure. Well, I like the idea of properly vetted. I just don't quite understand what that is. Maybe that comes as we get into this later.
Yeah, deciding how, where it needs to go, who needs to be involved, it'll be something we figure out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we have a problem, recent problem at the RAG level in the northern part of the state, where we're not quite meeting the notification requirements for CDBG grants and so on and so forth. I mean, a lot of it is just we just missed a public hearing or something at a municipality level. And so I just want to make sure that we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's in this vetting process.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Yep.
Mark, go ahead. Paul, I just want to kind of brag a little bit. 20 years ago, we were that city that had the
the public works director. Had everything on sticky notes all over the office. Right? So when we let him go, he just pulled all the sticky notes off and we put them in the computer. We had a system. No, but, so after he left, we've got a notebook that's about this thing, and it's our capital facilities plan. That capital facilities plan is broken down into everything: culinary water, sewer, roads, parks, fire equipment, everything like that. Every little section is present to 5 year, 5 to 10 year, 10 to 20 year. And working with our city engineer, everything has an estimate, a cost estimate on that. So every single thing is covered in there, and that's a document that's approved by city council, capital plan, when that's changed. But it's very fluid. You can take, you can take anything on that list. There could, some of those, there's 21 different items in the water, 15 in the sewer, but you can move those around. You can move those up if the need arises. So, well, that's what we've got. So we have no problem finding a CDBG project and no problem saying, hey, here's our list. And, this is our top priority at this time.
So, how does that work with the rest of your jurisdictions in the Wasatch Front Regional Council? Well, you've got yours. Do they have the same similar type thing in place?
Yeah, that I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean, the more developed or sophisticated communities are going to have those in place, but the there's a good chunk that don't have those.
But if you're in a sophisticated community, you have all that.
Classy.
You might get around and train all the rest of your cities.
But the requirement for the requirement lies with the entity that's the applicant, right? It's not all the surrounding entities have to have a CASI completed. It's the entity that's applying for CDBG funds, right? And just to ask a question as a point of order for clarification in my own mind, this is adding a CASI requirement for an application to be considered for CDBG funding. Is a change the staff is requesting this committee to consider in policy?
So not yet. So this is just a heads up. It's not a requirement right now, but we will need some sort of that is your grantees are going to have to show where they pulled the information from for their list. And so, like I said, some areas they can show that, like Six County, Jay talked about where they get their information from and what that looks like. And if your area is able to do that and the grantees in your area are able to do that, then that's great. If they're not, then hopefully the CASI template or will help
them.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I like the idea. I really do. I think it's important to plan. In our area, we can do better with that. So I like the idea, but just to clarify in my own mind, this is something that is not currently a policy requirement that will come before this committee for consideration at some point for a final approval to make the requirement.
This coming year, we're going to be experimenting and working with it, trying to refine the process, get a good process in place, and then once we get to that point, we will bring it back to this committee and talk about the results and discuss the future from there.
Thank you so much.
It's just we just didn't want to hit you all of a sudden with the, hey, we've got a new requirement that we're asking you to approve. It's working with you along the way.
Thank you. Good discussion. Any other questions or comments? Oh, I guess one more thing to work towards, getting a good list. And a good list, I think, is valuable. That lets you know where you're at and what kind of things need to be done in your area, in your jurisdictions. Okay. Next time, CDBG method of distribution discussion. many of you here, we've gone through this before and worked on it, and we're around to the time where we need to move forward, or if we want to discuss changes or whatever. So Zach, you want to give a review of where we're at and
yes,
what we're doing with this?
Stand up for a second. So in the packet with this big three on it, we've got the method of distribution. This has been the same method that's been in place for the last 3 years. When was it originally approved? 2018? I want to say 2018. And then we've re-approved it every 3 years. And so we are just now coming up on the need to re-approve the method of distribution for the next 3 years. We talked about this last September, seeing if there was any changes that the board would like us to make. And at the time, it was pretty good consensus on if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I just wanted to run it past y'all one more time before we requested the motion for it to be approved for the next 3 years. As you can see on the center table, using the state projection, we usually get somewhere in the neighborhood of 5.5 million. So using the approved methodology, those are the amounts that each region receives for distribution. Bear River around 776,000, Five County 907,000, Mountainland, just shy of 600,000. Six County, about 847,000. Southeastern, 778,000. The Basin, 611,000. With the Wasatch Front receiving about 978,000.
Any questions? Everybody understand this? I know we've worked on this new thing for, seems like, several years. But I think any input on how it's worked for each of your regions?
I think it's worked great. You and I were both involved 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more fair than it was 6 years ago. It's
yeah.
A little more distributed, I think, fairer. And I think it still holds true today. So I would recommend we keep the method of distribution.
Everybody feels, or the percentages, I know last time we looked at this, I guess 3 years ago, we talked about whether we wanted to change. If you look over on the far left-hand side, or if we take the money and we take a $400,000 base load to each of the areas, and then we apportion it based on those four areas, percent of state LMI, average poverty rate, pre-1980 housing, and pre-approved community.
Yes.
And that percentage of that money then goes into each of those categories, and that's how it's distributed out to the different areas based on those four criteria. Any questions, any discussion on whether we want to change those percentages? Do they still work?
Well, I'll make a motion to approve the method of distribution for the next year.
I'll second that.
Okay. Just a note, we're going to capture that motion, so hold it, Commissioner, and we'll do that during the application procedure policy. We'll add, make it part of that. So, that's good. All right. So, this would be what we're approving for the year 24, 25, 26, right?
Correct.
Right. Good question. I've always had that pre-1980 housing. Do we have to maybe move that up now to pre-1990 housing? I don't know. What is that?
It's how much of the older housing you have in your area, I think.
Okay, so.
Housing built before 1980. Yeah, go ahead.
And that is a metric that Housing and Urban Development uses in their method of distribution. And so that's a federally designated number. I don't know why they picked 1980 versus 1970 or 1990.
There's no discussion to change it.
Right.
It's got to be left page.
That could be a, that could be a part of it. I don't know. So that's okay. How we carried it over is we're just kind of copying their metric. I don't see why there's a reason that we have to stick to it, but that's the reason why we picked it. Okay. I don't know, maybe Kelly has some insight into that, but.
Yeah,
you're right. It's part of the formula for the national formula.
Okay, stick with it. Thank you. Any other discussion? Commission, we'll look for that motion then later in the next part. Any other discussion on this? Okay. 2025 CDBG application policies and procedures.
So I apologize, the printer wasn't able to get the books to us in time. So I'm going to put it up on screen for us to review. But in reality, there's not much change from last year.
Yeah.
All right, can we see that okay?
You've got a page in your packet that has these on.
Mm-hmm. So probably the biggest changes that we want to call out is we did some reorganization of the book. Moved a few things around. I'll show you where those are. In the very first chapter, we reorganized the chapter just to make it flow a little better. I included my inner history teacher came out and I included a quote from President Ford about the purpose of the Community Development Block Grant Program. So figured we'll make this educational and enlightening at the same time. So we added that, reorganized the chapter, but as far as any policy changes or any clarifications, in chapter 3, call attention to chapter 3. Tamara and I had an opportunity to go to a training last summer where we figured out that it is technically possible to fund ambulances through the Community Development Block Grant Program. That's been going back and forth for a number of years. We figured out how it's possible. So we put in some language to outline how.
Purchase. Oh, I saw some red.
Oh that was just our table that we put. Here's the projects that we funded last year.
Okay.
Same thing that we do every year. But yeah, the biggest thing I want to call out is ambulances. We figured out how to fund them and how to make sure that we can defend the purchase of an ambulance to HUD. Essentially, we can buy it for a local government and buy the ambulance for them, and then they outfit the ambulance. So,
just buying the shell like a meal on wheels.
Correct.
Truck. You have to put the stuff in after you get it.
You do.
Check.
So, other changes we've made. In chapter 4, updated to current dates and just reminded everyone of the 7-day minimum for public notice lengths. And then another thing that we did, and I'll call this out specifically in chapter 4, we are requesting permission in CDBG, we've had contracts vary in length between 12-month and 18-month, but given how long it sometimes is before we can get our grant agreement from HUD, which allows us to actually make the contracts with grantees from us to the state, we're just requesting that we put all contracts up to 18 months, so that way there's less need for me to sign extensions for contracts, so that way we can just make sure that projects are flowing smoothly and that we don't have any interruptions to services in areas, and that projects can be done without having to continue to come back and say we need an extension. So that was one. In chapter 5, we added a paragraph about the civil rights. We just called out that there was a resource at the back of the book. In chapter 7, we reorganized the procurement section, added more definitions to an appendix in the back, and just made the chapter a little skinnier so it's not as intimidating. Okay.
Well, no, my question for the end.
Okay. In Appendix A, SAM.gov registration, we call out a program that the state of Utah has through the APEX Accelerator Program in the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. They are a federally funded body that has the ability to help contractors and others register for UEI and SAM.gov accounts, so that way they can get one-on-one personalized help from experts. So we've added references to Appendix A for people to be able to contact them if they need to. Of course, my staff and I will be more than happy to help, but they're the experts. So if we have a question, we're going to them anyway.
Do they need to pay?
Nope, it's free.
Free.
Appendix B, just to kind of help with public noticing and public hearing requirements. I'm like Mayor Tippett. Thank you. I'm sorry. Excuse me. There was that issue that you mentioned. So we added some verbiage to our templates to talk about adding about to get, clarify instructions on how to hold a public hearing. Make sure you notice it has its own separate meeting with its own separate title that reads first CDBG public hearing. Make sure that you publish it for 7 days, and then make sure that you get it into the newspaper. Additionally, we added, we've changed up the template just ever so slightly to make sure that grantees, as soon as they are done with their public hearing, they had in the phrase, no further questions were asked, and the hearing was adjourned at whatever time it was.
And they also need to, did you already say the time of the
yeah.
Public hearing was
it? Yeah, we have
for the CDBG. We need to state that at the beginning of their minutes.
Yeah. So that's in there as well. We updated the income survey checklist, added new communities based off of the new HUD list that we that was released this July. James, I want to say it was July. But a new list came out for the HUD pre-approved list, so we added that in. And then we added two new appendixes, a procurement, where we just pulled stuff out of the procurement chapter and made it its own appendix. And then from chapter 1, we pulled the conflict of interest form and just put it in its own appendix, so that way it would be easier to find. Any questions?
You mentioned, we talked the other day about on the public hearing, mentioned that it, a reminder that it has to be its own public hearing. For example, when we've had these at Wasatch County, we've had a Wasatch County agenda for that council meeting, and it might be listed on the agenda, but the public hearing piece has to be its own separate posting within that state, information, or that state meeting website. In addition to maybe it's on the county or city agenda, that has to be its own agenda item on there too.
We updated the verbiage to support that if the hearing is held during a bigger meeting, so notice must be posted separately. And then in our templates, we also called out the community development block grant second public hearing needs to be its own meeting speech, not be part of any other. So its own posting.
Go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for updating the notice timeline from 14 days to 30 days. That's helpful. A couple of questions. or request, maybe. Will you send us the digital form? I think we already discussed this on the phone. But
yeah, it's approved. I'll be sending it out.
Yeah, of those templates so we can share.
After we pass it today.
After we pass it, I'll be sending out an electronic copy to everybody. And if there's like these public hearings, I'll be sending out a word to the AOGs so that they can distribute it.
And then as far as procurement goes, there was some confusion on verbiage in our RFP, their request for bids, or whatever we want to call them. I don't know. Just so we don't have that confusion this year, are you putting out a template that you want to be used for the procurement process, or how are we going to mitigate that issue?
So I am working with AWS contracting and legal to get a template put together. We weren't able to get it done in time to get into the book, but I will, as soon as I get one done, it'll be on our website. We'll be using that. And then next time we meet, we'll be requesting to put that into the book as part of our documentation.
Do you know when that will be produced? We'll have our workshops a week from.
I'll be meeting with contracting today about it.
Okay.
For the request for bid or invitation to bid, I spoke to the to HUD's labor specialist because we had to make sure that a lot of the bids were going out as requests for proposal, and they are open. Request for bids, they need to be closed, submitted closed. It's not supposed to be, you're not supposed to disclose the amount of your budget when you are soliciting bids. And there's a reason why, because there may be people who that HUD wants us to target, which are low Section 3 contractors, may be scared to even put a bid if they look at your budget that you're putting in your proposal is way above what they can afford to do the work for. So, and also, you shouldn't be disclosing that information. They should be able to put the bid, their numbers. That's a proposal when you say, we want you to bring in to do this job, and this is how much we're offering you. The bid doesn't state that. It says invitation to bid for, and then you describe your project without disclosing the amount that you're looking at for your project. That's the explanation that was given to me by the HUD specialist. And when you're doing CDBG projects, they are invitation to bid.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, have we ever had discussion about using methods other than newspapers?
Yes.
So we are exploring possibilities at the state level, but as of this moment, we have to continue to do newspapers. But we're very hopeful that HUD will agree with us here shortly on our additional methods. But that is
hopefully in the pipeline.
What if we don't even have a newspaper in the whole county?
That's the problem with some of our communities.
Well, Jack and I talked about this the other day. Unfortunately, it wasn't this way, but just about done. So, I mean, they're struggling like all of them.
I went to a HUD training. It was an environmental review training in Denver a couple of months ago, and HUD is no longer requiring that we post in the newspaper, but we have to update and amend our consolidated plan, which we're in the process of doing that. Once we take that out, submit that to HUD, HUD approves that, that'll no longer be a requirement. So we're in the process of getting that done.
So Zach, do I read this note on here? It says verbiage. This is the appendix C note on the back side. Verbiage must change to must rather than may. Isn't that backwards?
So it used to say may post in the newspaper. It was changed to say it must be posted in the newspaper. But like Jen said,
I think that's the issue of the phrase, though. What if we don't have a paper?
If we don't have a paper.
And especially when it says that it has to be in a paper of general. circulation, which is not general if you don't have. So that's not. That's
so in those on those case by case businesses situations, work with us and we'll figure out how to make sure that you are compliant with the citizen participation plan. But as soon as we can get that approved by HUD to pull out of the citizen participation plan, then we can drop that requirement at the state level for the program.
And what do they suggest that would be the method to notify the public of what's coming down?
Website, public meeting notice website, posting at location.
County city web pages.
We'll be figuring that out as part of updating our citizen participation planning consultative plan.
Okay. Thank you. It seems like we have a great template for this already in the Utah Open and Public Meetings Act. So it seems like our goal, and you guys are way ahead of me, don't get me wrong. Seems like our goal should be to convince the federal government that the Utah Open and Public Meetings Act is the right thing to follow. Certainly simplifies it for us at local jurisdictions because now we have a set of rules for Utah, and if those same set of rules could satisfy the federal government, that's a plus for us.
And it's a plus for small towns who cannot afford this huge amount of advertisement. We can save them their $500 or whatever.
And I think the Utah Open Public Meetings Act has already dealt with the newspaper issue. So there's a great template, in my opinion, of how we've dealt with this at the state level. We had a briefing on that, I think, meeting before last. It's a requirement to be on this board, right?
We trained, and we did a training back in March.
I'll make a note, and our program manager that's over our consolidated plan, and I'll have to look into that too. See what she can find out.
Yeah, and there's a ton of, and you guys know this, there's a ton of support from the state through the public notice website. For us as a small town, it's fantastic. I mean, we actually only have to put a pointer on our city website that says, hey, go look at the Utah public notice website, and all of the meeting agenda and the special public hearing and meetings. I mean, you put them on and they're there. And your residents, constituents can actually subscribe to a service where that information is pushed to them and they don't even have to go look for it. Just you get notification that maybe the city has done something.
Yeah, we use that.
Okay.
We're familiar with it. We use that. You can plug your ears if you want, Kelly, but federal programs, they're a lot harder to run and to manage, and there's just a lot more requirements.
Yeah, and I'll go back to where I started. It would be great if we could get federal requirements and state requirements. I see.
Stay with us.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions?
I got a couple. On that, I'm still concerned about that top page, that top sentence on change that public hearings must be their own meeting, not part of any other meeting. So I have a council meeting scheduled, and now do I adjourn from the council meeting, go into another meeting, separate meeting, that only has that? I go down and I have two public hearings in there that are other than CDPG, have those public hearings. Then I have to adjourn the meeting and go into another city council meeting.
Mayor, can I make a point? Just something that we do. We don't adjourn our meetings. We just recess from our commission meetings and then go into a public hearing and then go back from recess into our commission meetings after the public hearings. I don't know if anybody else has a better method or example, but that's what we do in Bagot County.
We did that last night in council meeting. We had a hearing section in the middle.
I think that what we are saying here is that we close the CDBG public hearing. We're not closing the whole meeting. It needs to say there that there were no further public comments or the CDBG meeting was closed at this time. Public hearing was closed.
I think the important piece too is that you might have it listed on your agenda for your council or or whatever. Right. But you also have to list that CDBG public hearing as a separate piece in addition to your other meeting as a separate piece in the state notice website.
Right. I think you always do, don't you? Don't you? Every so, public hearing you have, don't they have to be separately?
So I'll give you an example that happened just last year, and that's why we really stressed it this way. We have a community that put it within its, they noticed a meeting where they had it as a line item to talk about.
Okay.
Now, if you have it, if you have, where they notice it as a line item, which doesn't technically meet the requirements of the public notification of, hey, we are having a meeting to talk about the community development block grant, and here's the hearing. So what we are trying to stress is you can have it on the same night. You can have them, like, you can have one start at 6 and the next start immediately after. Those are fine. It's just the community development block grant should be its own separate standalone meeting where it's not part of any other meeting. It can be like you can't have it slotted in the middle on one agenda, but when you notice it on the website, it should be its own separate standalone, nothing else meeting. Does that make sense?
No. But will we say, we'll do two meetings.
The way that we always recommend for our teams to do it is they just post a separate notice for their city council, a separate notice for their CDBG hearing, and they have the hearing before their meeting starts, so they're opening their hearing, they're closing their hearing, and then they're opening their city council. It's just completely separate all the way through.
Okay.
That's the simplest way.
That's probably what I will do.
Yeah.
I'll make two meetings. That's fine.
Okay.
Because I know public hearings are...
We have, under a former government, all public hearings have to be 6 for later, start at 6. So what he suggested, we're going to start at 4. If anyway.
Technically, just budget.
Yeah.
Public hearings have to be after 6.
All of ours have to be.
Really? And then down here, Zach, is there any way we can see that in income survey checklist?
Yeah.
Let's see that. So then we can see. We're still eligible.
Pre-approved list. Is that what you're
asking
for?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Washington Terrace?
Yeah.
And
bigger.
Washington Terrace and Mark.
No,
nope.
What
you're
going
to gain
on that?
Okay.
You're growing up.
I mean,
he's getting
more.
Yeah,
we'll just do this for okay.
Can you scroll up as long as we're here?
Yeah, as long as we're here. I'm paying for class.
I want to be somebody.
Oh, remind me of the name?
Nibley.
Or any other brag.
Oh, we were just
swearing over.
And we can look when it comes out.
Oh, we've got all the...
I included the CDB census designated places as well.
And the Native American CDBG groups included in there.
Yeah.
The Ocheto and the Navajo Mountain. Because they get their own funding.
Right. Anyone else?
All right, any other questions? Okay, we're going to go, Commissioner, here in a minute for the motion. Reminder, the method distribution is part of this application book, so if the motion approved this will include what we had before. We need to have a contingency in there that we accept the policy book as presented with the contingent that Southeast or CERTA ready to ranking being posted in public comment adopted by the local board. They haven't done that yet, but
it's posted as of yesterday. We just had a big discussion about the website that we have, so
we've been working with them and Salacious E. Good to go.
We're good.
So they're doing what they need to do. So
will you restate what you'd like in the motion?
Just a contingency in the motion we approve the motion, or the, approve the application with the contingency of Southeast or AUG, AULG's or CERTA, their rating ranking rules are being posted for public comment. And that public comment period is how long?
It started yesterday, and it will go until October 21st in our public hearing
process. Is that a 30-day?
Yeah.
Just so that it's approved that they recognize that they need to help complete that process.
Okay, so I'll amend my motion to approve the 2025 policy and procedures handbook, including the method of distribution. For the next 3 years, with the contingency that CERTA goes through their process, their public hearing, and adoption process. Is that correct?
Their rating and ranking.
Rating and ranking process.
And their local policy board will have to approve it.
And that it's approved by their local policy board.
And they've started that process with that kind of time. So, okay, we have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. He's on down there.
Yes.
The next item is lunch, but we're really moving along here today. We're ahead, so we're probably move on down.
Because we're ahead, do you just want to give an update real quick on bringing the application policies and procedures back in March and why we're going to do that?
Yeah, I'm
ready. Yes, go ahead.
So, I promise I have to only allergies.
So, let's do the vote.
Fair. So, I just wanted to give the board a little update. The HCD leadership team and I have been discussing wanting to make some suggestions to the board on some more streamlining of the application policies and procedures and the grantee handbook. Normally we do it piece at a time. We do a little bit every time we get together as a policy board. And rather than just kind of drip feed it in little by little, we'd like to come back in March and approve in just one big swipe. We'll be working with the AOGs to iron out any wrinkles that we have in the program. We'll be working with applicants to see, okay, where's the pain points that we can relieve and make it a little bit easier. We're also updating our consolidated plan along the way, so we want to make sure that we are in total alignment with the consolidated plan. And so in March, we'll be bringing back the policies and procedures, and prior to then, we'll be sending out a copy of them along with a copy of the grantee book for your review, because it's going to be kind of a bigger request from the CDBG team for making sure that our policies are aligned, and we're just trying to make sure that we're aligning the program to best serve applicants and the needs of the state. Anything you'd like to add, Jim?
One thing. So we'll also be asking you to approve the method of distribution again. So last March we talked about coming up with a good plan to get the unallocated funding out the door. So after all the projects are rated and ranked, if we have funds left over, what to do with that funding, whether we move it to a different region that has shovel-ready projects or just what that looks like. So we need more time to get with the AOGs to talk about what makes the most sense, putting all of that together. And so we'll have that ready for the March policy committee meeting, and we'll have to ask for review and approval of the method of distribution again, keeping all of the guidelines that we have that you just approved today, but just adding on what to do with that additional funding, just so we're not sitting on it for a whole nother year.
So keep track of issues and things that happen to the cycle, and we'll have a productive meeting in March. Get that all refined, right?
Right.
Dr. Lowe.
Okay. All right. How to apply workshop schedule. It's in your packet. Everybody, at the speed, got your locations all tied down, it looks like. And
any corrections that need to be made? We count for the whole piece.
Each AOG, how's it looking in your regions? What, you're getting budgets in or the requests? I know last year in Mountain, we were cutting down on requests. And what's happening in the other regions?
For our region, last year we had like a really high amount of applications compared to previous years. I think we initially had 16 and then we ended with 13-ish. But
that's right.
This year we definitely are seeing a decrease in interested parties. We did a registration for our pilot workshop, so we can have a track on how many people are coming. I think yesterday, as I thought, we had around 15 registered. And then we usually have double that for Sanders, so a little concerned.
Seems like thank you. We had a lot attended, but only a few came through after they had all of that information. Any other reasons you want to share what's happening in yours?
I was like, yours, Cameron, they start seeing all the hoops that they have to jump through, and especially in a bigger construction project, that they can wage and
stop working. Yeah. We've had, it seems like in Mountland, it's the same, those that have learned the hoops and know how to do it are the ones come back year after year, and they have worthy projects that are ongoing, but in fact, they're the machines we don't get a lot of endurance.
Yep.
Any other?
So every HUD, or we attend a HOFSA conference twice a year, usually in March or April, and then again in the fall. And HUD, there's always HUD representatives there, and one of the things that they always talk about is with states is, you know, we realize that states are having, or some states are having a hard time spending their CDBG funds in a timely manner and that sort of thing. And so if you guys can provide us with specific examples as to, you know, why your grantees don't want to apply for CDBG or what some of those bigger struggles are, we know that the federal regulations make it really hard. They don't get very much money and they're asked to do a whole lot for those funds, right? But if you can provide any sort of specifics that we can take and talk to the HUD reps about, that would be helpful.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out this past year, as I was working on reviewing the six counties, our six's bid advertisements and helping them to make sure that they are compliant, I was pretty impressed of how many small towns that they were able to bring in and do applications. Small towns that I had not, and I've been in the program for over 20 years, and I had not seen some of the small towns ever submitting an application. So I don't know what R6 is doing, but they were able to pull in a lot of small towns that never submitted an application or had not come in for an application for over 5-10 years. So I don't know what R6 was doing, but I did work with a lot of small towns that were like, I'm like, oh, I didn't know there's a small town with this name. Oh, I haven't seen them for a while. They're back.
That's great. We want people to have needs to apply and perhaps, you know, hopefully get some funds to help with those projects that are important for their community.
I think one more thing, too, just for AOGs to share with their communities is CIB, the funding is extremely limited and very competitive, and I know a lot of grantees would rather apply for CIB than CDBG because it is easier, it is state funding, but going to be harder to get those funds.
Yeah. Do we have any? We talked about, so we got about, what is it, 5.5 million?
Mm-hmm. Pretty safely bet it'll be around 5.5 million.
Any, so it's not going to go down. I guess that's our concern. We'd love it to go up, but no chance of it going down. It depends what happens in November.
Yeah, it's somewhat. It's all up to the federal budget, so fingers crossed. I mean, like, one of the big things that we continually ask, was talking about is what can we do to support COSDA's efforts and HUD's efforts to get increased funding to the program, and just being able to show that good projects are getting funded and that we're getting the money out timely and getting support from the AOGs goes a long way to helping us say, hey, these are things that we can do, these are things that we're doing, and this is why it'd be great if Congress would give us more money.
But COSDA's the whole nation, right? So I know, I think Utah's, like you say, we're doing a good job. I think the money comes, we get it out. We get it out to small communities. But they're meeting with 49 other states that maybe aren't as effective. And so Congress looks at that, and they're not going to earmark Utah and say, okay, so you're doing this great, we'll give you an extra $10 million.
Right.
It's the whole program.
And that's why they're so concerned with spend down. At COSDA too, they're like, how are we going to go to Congress and say we want more money for this program when states aren't spending CDBG quickly? That's hard to do. We also participate in Community Development Week every year, and that's also a national event. And we share pictures of your projects and send all of our numbers from Utah. So we're doing everything we can at the state level to show that this is a needed program.
Hopefully they love it. Okay. You've got a chart in your packet on the Community Development Block Grant Policy Committee members. We'd like to point out that Paul Cousins from Five Counties Permit Fires, he's indicated a desire to continue. Thank you, Paul. We'd like to recognize Scott. He notified us this is his last meeting. So Scott, it's been great to work with you, and how are you? Appreciate your dedication, your time. You'll be replaced by Greg Jensen, Craig, from Fairfax County.
Out of Richfield.
Is he a commissioner?
Yes.
So Greg Jensen will be with us in March. And once again, thank you. Scott, let's give you a round of applause. And also Danny Van Wagner from CERTA has indicated a willingness to continue, and it would be great to continue work with you, Danny. So other than that, any questions, any other changes that you're aware of in your regions on that list? Then we have a list from the Association of Government Representatives. All right. Moving right along. Okay. Next is our program year schedule.
All right. Somewhere in my papers. Oh, because I have it already set aside.
There you go.
Just wanted to call attention to
budget? No.
Okay. Just call attention to the program year schedule. It's pretty similar to last year's schedule. The state deadline for applications is still January 31st. Go through this. We are in September. So we have everyone's rating and ranking policies either approved or CERTA is working on theirs. We had our policy committee meeting today. The AOGs are beginning to hold workshops. We have one that will be taking place next week. R6 is on the ball. And then the rest will be taking place throughout October. And through October through December, if anybody wants to do an income survey,
They just need to get with their AOG rep, who will get with us, will provide approval for the methodology, and we'll go from there. In November, December, January, applicants prepare their program. In November, if anybody wants to do a project that would qualify under the national objective for slum or blight, they need to get with state staff and we need to approve. That training that Tamara and I went to, we learned just how deep the slum and blight mission goes. So there may be some interesting opportunities for us to designate something as slum and blight and do something impactful in the community. So if somebody has an idea, don't hesitate to reach out. Be more than happy to discuss. But we just have to verify that by November. In January, applications are due on January 31st by 5 p.m. It locks out at 5 p.m. This year, we'll be working on the consolidated plan, and in January, they are due, the first round is due to the first part of the process, I would say, is due. The AOG reps and the ACD team will be working together on that quite closely. And then we still have the policy of grantees must spend down 50% of their of any prior grant prior to application in order to be eligible. In February, state staff will meet with AOG reps and will review applications for completeness and make sure that they are eligible to be funded. And then February will be the next deadline for working with AOGs for the consolidated plan and annual action plan. February, March, AOGs will rate and rank applications. And then in March, we will complete the annual action and consolidated plan and start working on getting that submitted to HUD. April, AOGs will submit their rating and ranking to the state. We'll hold our mandatory grantee workshop and then hold a second public hearing grantees will hold their second public hearings in April, May. And I apologize, I missed to put on here. We will hold our March meeting sometime in March, which we'll discuss next number two.
Okay. Any questions on the year schedule, program schedule?
I don't have a question on the schedule, but this just brought to mind with the LMI surveys. That is one of the obstacles we see with applicants or potential applicants to come to the workshop, but then the LMI survey process can be arduous. So I just want to put that on your radar if you could revisit, you know, some of the other eligible ways to put your survey, look at project toolkit. And we've noticed also in our other urban counties in our entitlement that it just seems that people are less and less willing to respond to in-person, tell us your income. Like, we're just struggling with people not comfortable with that. It's going to become more of an issue. So if it's possible, as you're updating the policy handbook, the big overhaul, to maybe explore what other reasonable options we could have for service.
Absolutely.
That would be a good one to take.
Yeah, in March, at least.
Yeah. Okay, any other business? Yes.
Thank you. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I remember from a meeting in the spring that we were going to talk about in this September meeting what to do about money that had been allocated to AOGs, but CARES Act money that had been allocated but had not been spent by those AOGs yet. Whether we carry over to another year or there be a reapplication or did I make that up all by myself?
Jen, was that part of the discussion you mentioned that we'll be looking at in the March meeting? Yeah. Is something different?
No. So the policy committee, AOGs received several deadlines. We got several rounds of CARES Act funding, round one, round two, round three. And there were due dates that were specific due dates for each round of that funding. And the due dates were reviewed and approved by this policy committee. Round one applications are this date, round two, round three. And so I can't remember the end date that we gave for all of those projects, but we're not doing any more CARES Act. We're not using that money, I can't remember exactly how much we have left. But no, we're not doing those projects anymore. And part of that is it's really hard to provide. So something that we have to do with those projects is we have to provide a prepare, prevent, or respond to COVID. And it's really hard to do that right now. So we're not.
Ryan?
I can catch up with staff afterwards. Sorry.
Shay, did you have a comment?
This sheet was just in my packet at the same point. All right, this is all.
Which address, Shay?
Just under our
the 250 North Main, not accurate.
It's a nice building.
I didn't. I stay here sometimes. So
yeah.
Travis and Sylvan. No, we do have the deck thumbed up. Come down.
Hey, any other DJ? Any other business?
We want to set a date for March.
Yeah. Yep, in the text, that we. So look at your calendars.
Thursdays are good for me.
Any preference? Let's see where if it was kind of the same Thursday, we'd be looking at March 20th. That work for everybody?
Good day.
You mentioned location. Does this location work well for everybody? Is it still available to us?
Yeah, we can get this.
Does this work for everybody? See, I don't see the answer.
Yes.
Free parking.
March 20th at 10 o'clock, the same location. Does that work? Okay, we'll look for that.
Okay, I will send out invitation 10 o'clock again.
Yep.
Start then.
Did you get that, Brian?
Yes.
Julie, did you want to make anything on this sheet?
I don't do that anymore. Sorry.
Janelle, sorry.
What?
Did you want to mention anything on this sheet?
No. I can mention something. Just make sure for those who are staying at the hotel that you have your hotel receipt attached to the reimbursement, your travel reimbursement. If you stayed at a hotel that is more than the state per diem, you will only be reimbursed for the amount of the state per diem, the difference will come out of your pocket. And then if you stayed at a hotel and you're only 20 miles from this meeting location, you will not get reimbursed. You can only stay at a hotel if you are within 50 miles one way trip. So if any of you wanted to stay at a hotel to come here, that will be out of your own pocket.
Okay. Remember to turn in your conflict of interest, both of office papers, where do they go?
And also, if you are driving a vehicle that belongs to your work, you will not be reimbursed that mileage. That is considered by the state as double dipping. So make sure that you don't try to charge the state for driving a certain vehicle or a or R6 vehicle or any AOG vehicle.
Okay. Like lunch is here, so we won't have to break for lunch and then come back to the meeting. We can adjourn and then sit around and enjoy lunch and visit and so forth before we head back to our various areas of expertise.
Motion to adjourn.
Have a motion and a second. All of the favors?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
That's why I sang down. I try to make sure it's going to be fully but you know what?
Yeah,
another friend.
Oh,
so Heather's going to
take
my
place.
Yeah, so you're the one I'm going to put on the email and be like, that's all right.
Yeah.